WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk, live from Broadcast House here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I don't go anywhere alone. If I can at all help it, joining me as my co-host this evening, also part of our conversation, is Rockland Selectman Chair Mike O'Loughlin is along for the ride this evening. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, Kevin. Great. Thank you for having me once again. Always a pleasure to come in and talk all things Rockland.
Fantastic weather we're having.
Yeah, it can't be beat. It's perfect. And they just said that, I think I just heard your weatherman say that the weekend's going to be clear as well. So, you know, you can't beat it. Just keep working on my tan.
Knock on wood. Yeah, yeah. No, I was teasing you. Came in, you got a t-shirt on. I'm like, wow, look at you. Guns out. He goes, hey, Kev, sun's out.
I might be darker than you, actually.
That's very possible.
Might be the case. The Irish guy is darker than the Italian guy.
Good
point. That's a first.
So Mike's going to be part of the conversation on hold, waiting to chat with us as well, is Rockland Fire Chief Scott Duffy. He'll be joining the conversation in just a moment. We're just going to give you a quick rundown as to who is on our show this evening. Again, a lot of work and effort goes into putting together a good comprehensive talk show, giving you a variety of guest things that are going on in and around the communities that we serve here on the South Shore. Fun conversation coming up after talking with Mike and Chief Duffy about everything Rockland. Casey Sherman, New York Times bestselling author. And talk with him a little bit about the Hunting Whitey stage adaptation, which starred Neil McDonough. This actually took place on May 16th. If you didn't have a chance to see it, what a fantastic show. We'll talk with Casey about that and see if they're going to do more than just the one showing. It was that good. Sold out performance. We'll talk with him about that. Hour number two, we will speak with... We're actually going to do a little bit of a Council on Aging summer program update. And as usually, we try to get some folks from the local Council on Aging centers. We have Tammy Murray from Hanover, Julie Burke from Rockland, also Gretchen Emmets from Pembroke. Get an idea as to what are some of the things that are going on with your local Council on Aging and what are some of the fun things they have planned and programs that they have for our folks who are, you know, enjoying the twilight of their lives. And then we close things out with Michelle McGrath. Again, staying with the theme of summer, some of the things that are going on in and around the South Shore, and maybe you're looking for things to do this summer. We have a great rundown, and Michelle McGrath will be here to kind of give us some of the insight on that. But we turn our attention, our focus, to our very first conversation. The great town of Rockland. We should first, you want to welcome in our caller?
Chief Duffy, are you with us?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Chief, how are you?
Good, good. Sorry I had to call in. I'm down in D.C. at a fire conference down here, working with our congressman to support local funding and, you know, support some of the Fire Act grants that we have going on.
So, you know, the Rockland voters went to the polls recently, and they did not decide to approve a new firehouse. What do we do next here?
That's a great question, and you know I still have to meet with our fire station building committee, and also you know obviously discuss it with the board of selectmen of you know kind of which way they're thinking of heading. You know I'm kind of hoping that we you know we continue on, move forward, maybe try for the project again as it is. You know the project as it's designed. You know we're looking at a building that's going to last the town much further. Sorry, I'm just trying to walk and keep up. So
it's all good.
If I'm huffing and puffing here, I'm sorry, but you know we're just trying to give the town the best you know fire department and station that it can get, while also thinking of the future. So you know that's my thinking at this time.
So I have to ask you, Mike. I mean, what are you hearing from the residents since? You know, the town elections. I mean, what were the thoughts as to why this was not something that was successful?
So, I mean, obviously, Kevin, you know what the current state of inflation is and how costs have gone up on basically everything. And right now, what we're hearing from the residents is that they just pay too much in taxes. We recently had our water rates go up, our sewer rates are going up, so all these other areas, I think they're just looking at it in a sense where, and Scott, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think a lot of the pushback, some of the people at town meeting felt like it was a luxury, where I don't think so. I appreciated the way that you and the Fire Building Committee presented it and put it together to look ahead that, you know, you guys took the long approach and said, you know what, we're going to do something that we don't have to continue to invest in. We're not going to have to build another one, you know, 10 years from now or 15, 20 years from now. Our current station, one side of it was built in 1939, and then the addition to it was built in 1978. There's been nothing done to that fire station in over 45 years. So there's definitely a need for a fire station. And to your first question to Scott, what's the next steps? You know, what can we do? Because the residents did come out and you know, there was definitely some anger in the crowd, and I don't know what that was necessarily about, but I think it's one of those things that, you know, we do understand that they're feeling the burden of taxes, and we've tried over the years to try to present different plans that would assist them with that would lessen their taxes, and those have been voted down as well. So it's, you know, kind of puts me in a position where I'm left scratching my head. I mean, I don't know, Chief, how you felt, or if Kevin's got, you know, a different question on that, but it was one of those things where I was kind of surprised with, you know, the visceral reaction from some of the people in the audience.
Right, I think, Mike, I think a lot of the visceral reaction was, you know, they voted at the ballot to, you know, to vote the station down, which is, you know, obviously, you know, their right to do. And I think there was a misunderstanding of why it was still on the town meeting ballot or on the town meeting warrant. And I think that's where a lot of the anger came from. And maybe we as a town have to educate the residents a little bit better in that, you know, and even, you know, provide more education to them on the needs of a new fire station and why it is as big as it is. And so that's how I see it. And if we can provide that, hopefully we can be, you know, successful in the future.
Good, Mike.
So, Scott, I mean, you and I have talked about this, obviously. You know, what were the specific, I want to say the specific reasons, but what were the underlying reasons as far as safety concerns for the firefighters that you guys were looking to address in this the construction of the new station?
I think you know, as you look at the fire service and as, you know, we're looking at an 80-year-old building, a little bit older, and you know, the science wasn't there, and the you know, we're understanding more of what we're coming back to the station with as far as chemicals on our uniforms, the contamination, the diesel exhaust contamination, how our gear reacts to that, how it off gases, and how it affects the firefighters themselves. You know, they're eating, living, sleeping at that fire station. Amongst the dirty gear, as clean as we can get it, it's still going to off-gas some contaminants. And that's going to make firefighters sick. Fortunately, in Rockland, we haven't had to deal with that. But it is a growing concern
you know, throughout the country.
If I can ask, just for the listeners who may not live in Rockland, maybe they're not fully up to speed as to what was the cost of the project that was proposed, that was put on the ballot, that was a question. Chief.
The cost of the project was $33.2 million, and that included design fees, construction fees, owner's project manager, which we're required to have by law in the state of Massachusetts, you know, kind of a clerk of the works, and then, you know, a small contingency to address inflation and to kind of plan for it. And I know that it sounds like a lot, broken down to the average homeowner, that is about $365, $326 a year increase in taxes.
Now, are we expecting are there any debt exclusions that are going to be coming off the book soon, or is there right now a collection of projects that have been done? I believe that a new school was just recently built, right?
Yeah, we just recently built a elementary school to house all three of our elementary schools that we currently have. To answer that question, in about 10 years from now, we were looking at if this project had passed, then our debt would be level to what the current rates are now. So it would really be an increase. It would be an increase. You'd feel the increase for the next 10 years, but then after that, it would be back to what our current level of debt is at this time, with some projects coming off the books. We had a few roads projects that we passed a few years back and other infrastructure projects over the years.
So what now? Again, I know the chief had said that you have to go back to the fire department building committee and then have a conversation with them automatically, knowing that this is going to be a delay on this. We're also talking that you're going to see cost increase. Does that make either of you concerned? We'll start with you, Mike.
So that was my biggest concern when this project was initially proposed, probably seven years ago, when the committee was first brought together. And I think the first thing that they presented to us, I think we were looking at $16-17 million. And now fast forward 7 years later, and we're up to $33 million. You know, we wait another 7 years. What are we up to? Are we up to $40-50 million? And if inflation continues to rise the way it is, you know, unfortunately, when you see things like school building projects, you know, they've got the MSBA that is always there to provide, you know, a portion of that money. We don't have any kind of funding projects that, you know, funding programs that assist in, you know, our infrastructure or our emergency response buildings.
Chief, your thoughts as far as the cost and it, you know, going up from $33 million. I mean, how much more will it increase if you have to wait until the fall or next spring?
Correct. I think realistically, you know, we're looking at next spring. You know, I think the fall is going to be, you know, too early. I think that wound is still pretty raw with the townspeople. So, you know, I think, you know, that gives us a year of education to give them. But I think Mike handled it very well. You know, the architects were looking at 7-8% increase in costs over the next year.
Do either of you do like a compare and contrast, especially knowing locally? You look at Pembroke. Pembroke just passed their public safety project. Whitman, this past weekend, after multiple tries, they're going to build a new DPW building. Do you look at projects like that and seeing that it took a while for the communities to be on board, and the method that maybe the town leaders took to get their projects to a positive point?
So I think it's one of those things. It's tough, and that's a good question, because it's one of those things that you always try to consider. You try to consider whether or not you're overburdening the resident, not with just the presentation of a project, but with the continuance of going back to the well and coming back to them. You know, we heard them loud and clear. They voted at the ballot, and they voted against it at town meeting. So, you know, we get it. But a lot of the people that got up, they were saying, we don't argue with you that we need a new fire station. We just can't handle the cost. So now it's up to, you know, myself and the other members of the Board of Selectmen, as well as Chief Duffy and the members of the Fire Building Committee, to possibly look at it differently. We could, you know, inquire about grants programs that might exist. You know, we hear rumors all the time of state legislatures are working on grants for these things, but those have been rumors for 10 to 15 years. So I'll believe that when I actually see one come out. But
well, how would you guys feel? I mean, we have something for to build new schools where the state, through taxes that are accrued, you have the Mass School Building Authority. Why not something that would be a municipal building, authority type of a tax? I mean, what is your thoughts? Have you heard from legislators who are saying that that's something being considered?
So my last conversation that I had with Senator Keenan about a month and a half ago, he said that the talk is gaining traction, at least on the Senate floor. They're just trying to find a funding mechanism for, a public safety building authority within the state. And as much as, that would be excellent, it would be a great opportunity for Rockland, we'd be battling against every other, town in the Commonwealth.
So I would ask you this, looking at this, do you, Chief, look to modify the design, or is it a matter of, what else could you do for this to be successful? Do you think it would have to come down to modifying it?
If we have to lower that number, if we have to try and maintain that number, we have to lose square footage. Square footage is the cost.
Yep.
We had some experts come in. We had Bob Mitchell out of New York. Bob is an expert fire station designer throughout the country, and he did the programming and the design with us. He met with us on multiple occasions, looked at our needs, looked at our equipment, and then also looked where we might be in 20, 40 years. So, as much as you hate to cut back and put the town behind the eight ball on a fire station, there's give and take, and obviously we're going to have to, give a little bit to hopefully make it work.
So one of my concerns with that, though, Scott, right, and you and I have talked about it, right, if you start cutting back, you could cut back significantly, you could still come back with $33 million.
Correct.
It could be cut back significantly, and it's the same cost, because the only thing that's going up is cost. So...
Right.
So it's tough. It's a tough call, and it's unfortunate because I think the residents do understand that there is definitely a need for a new fire station, but I think everybody's purses and wallets are really feeling the burden right now of inflation.
If folks are tuned in right now, you are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD, and we have Michael Laughlin, Rockland Selectman Chair. And on the phone, we have Rockland Fire Chief Scott Duffy. Any good news from your visit in D.C.? Is it just kind of searching out for grants for whether it's to buy apparatus or gear for your station?
So yes, we just left Congressman Keating's office, and he's well versed in the Assistance for Firefighters grant, which is a federal FEMA grant that we use to buy equipment. Also, you can get some staffing out of that as well. Well-versed in it, he supports it, and he's going to continue to support it for us. More importantly is that he has filed for Rockland, for the town of Rockland, a $2 million grant for an emergency operations center, whether it's going to be in a new fire station or if we have to modify the current one at Town Hall. That's yet to be seen. It'd be nice to be able to put that money towards a new fire station, but that's possibly a potential federal fiscal year 25 look ahead that he's filing for us.
And how great is that to know that you have our legislative delegation, someone like Keating down there doing work to try to at least get those extra dollars to help your firehouse?
Yeah, it's great, and what made me feel really good about it is I didn't have to broach the subject. It was right off the top of his head. He, it was like, he had just read our proposal yesterday, and for all I know, he may have, but it was good to know that it was still on the forethought, and he was personally familiar with it.
Now, are you a big fan of D.C.? Are you staying somewhere nice, and... Have you had a chance to grab something, eat at one of the nice restaurants they have?
We have. It's been very good. You know, there's been tons of meetings with all the congressmen. It's a working trip down here, so it's been good to make all that stuff happen.
If only you went a few weeks early, you could have participated in the cherry blossom season.
Yeah, there we go. We missed it.
The blooming. Well, Chief, we want to thank you so much for joining us for a few moments and talking about updates regarding the firehouse, much needed firehouse in the town of Rockland.
Yeah, Kevin, I appreciate you having the subject and having us on to discuss it. Thank you.
Hey, before I let you go, sad news today. I should say sad, but he might be happy. But one of your local chiefs retiring today, John Nuttall, retiring from the Abington Fire Department.
Yes, John and I became chiefs within 6 months of each other. We've worked these past 13 years very closely, and he will be missed. But they'll be in good hands with Chief Glenn and Deputy Driscoll. So, you know, I wish John well in his retirement, and hopefully it's a long one for him.
The beat goes on. Well, Chief, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chief.
Thanks, Mike. There is Rockland Fire Chief Scott Duffy joining us. What else do you want to talk about in regards to the great town of Rockland? Any updates?
Well, you know, one of the other things that came up at town meeting, and this is kind of the time of year right now where you're just kind of digesting, you know, everything that came through town meeting. But one of the things that I was really excited about and that I worked closely with our police chief and our fire chief on was leaving civil service. We were able to negotiate out of civil service, which I think puts us in a great position from a hiring standpoint. You know, for a long time, we've had, you know, a lot of difficulty in attracting, you know, the best candidates out there. Now we can recruit the best candidates out there. You know, there is some pushback from our local, you know, veterans groups and, you know, looking for veterans preference. And we definitely went above and beyond to assure them that whatever we write for our hiring standards will definitely include a veteran preference. So, but that was good, and you know, we negotiated out with the unions. The unions were on board with us, which, you know, if you were to ask some of them, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, they definitely would not have been. But you know, it's exciting time because we're able to now attract and recruit candidates for the town of Rockland.
How important is that? I mean, being able to attract, because as we know these days, it's hard. There are a lot of positions, police, fire, restaurant. Mm-hmm. That folks aren't necessarily saying, "Hey, I want to do that. I want to, you know, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a police officer. I want to work in the restaurant, hospital, business."
Well, one of the things that we did was we negotiated with the unions to give them educational benefits. So, for each level of education, an associate's degree, it might be a 10% increase. Bachelor's degree, 15%. Master's degree, you know, 20%. So. They are incentivized to be educated, to continue their education, which is also, you know, great to attract people to the town for these positions. But I also think it's one of those things that smaller towns have always struggled, because if somebody ends up from civil service on the list of a big city, they stay on that list. They stay on that list forever, and they may never, ever get a position in you know, as a first responder, whether it's police or fire. They may never get a job. They might be on that list, you know, for 2 years, and then they take it again, another 2 years or 2 years, and they just keep moving up the list, but then moving back the list as other candidates come through with, you know, different considerations. So you sit back and it's like, we might be looking for people and only have 6 people on our list, where a town like Brockton, a couple towns over, has 1,000 people on their list, or the city of Boston, Cambridge, thousands upon thousands of people that will never actually step foot in a fire department or in a police department, but they stay on that list because those are the towns that they civil service, you know, they apply to when they apply to civil service. So.
Do you find yourself having conversations with other leaders in neighboring communities and finding out, I mean, was this idea broached because of other communities saying, hey, let's opt out of civil service, and it might be the right thing to do, especially when it comes to hiring practices?
So it's funny, we found out after the fact that other communities were also doing the same thing. You know, one of the things that we always try to pride ourselves in is although we watch what other communities are doing, we always try to do what is best for us, and not, you know, we try to be the trendsetter in that case. And I've had conversations with several other local leaders in local communities that I won't say the names, but where they have had this the same, where they've pushed back and they've asked, you know, how were you able to get that union to get on board with that? And obviously, you know, incentivizing education, you know, is a huge thing.
Sure.
You know, we talked about inflation. Well, what's going to get people to go for that more than increasing their pay, you know, based on the work they, in most cases, have already put in. It's one of those things that I think you're seeing it, and we've talked to state reps and state senators, and they've said that there's a lot of towns. I think we might have been like the 40th or 50th town in the last couple of years that has voted at town meeting to leave civil service.
Very interesting. Well, something that we'll keep an eye on, follow. You're staying for the ride, so so he's not going anywhere. Thank Mike for at least opening the show up with some good conversation regarding the town of Rockland, and of course, possibly one day building a new Rockland firehouse. We're going to step aside, but when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Casey Sherman will be joining us. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
What is AA?
Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of people who have had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, visit AA.org. Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Joining us is a gentleman who I say it in a light term, a repeat offender here to Monday Night Talk. Fantastic guest. Always here to kind of talk about some of the great projects that he has in the works. Although this evening, it's more so talk about something past tense. Give him an opportunity to kind of talk about fantastic project that just hit the stage on May 16th. It was actually last Tuesday. We're talking about Casey Sherman, New York Times bestselling author, along with his partner Dave Wedge, as they did a stage adaptation of their book, Hunting Whitey. And this starred Neil McDonough. This was at the Wilbur in Boston. Casey, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me tonight.
And I'm not alone. I actually have a co-host this evening, Michael Laughlin, who I actually talked to him about not only yourself, but this fantastic production. It's interesting that this is the second stage adaptation that you've done. April, you actually did one on a series of your books. This particular one, this was just basically solely focused on Hunting Whitey. Let's talk a little bit about kind of the back. What was it like to kind of at least put this together and then see it actually hit the stage in front of a packed house?
Sure. I mean, you know, we wanted to do something groundbreaking with the material. We were looking to, you know, last year we did four vignettes taken from some of our books. And this year we wanted to focus on one story that would sustain over three, you know, acts. And obviously the Whitey Bulger story was kind of a first story that we thought of. And, you know, Dave and I began to kind of noodle the script, you know, taking passages from our book, reimagining them as stage production, and then bringing in, you know, all those other elements that you saw and other people saw last Tuesday night, which was, you know, it's kind of a hybrid production. It's part stage play, part live podcast, and part, you know, immersive multimedia presentation, and I hope we pulled it off.
Casey, thank you. This is Michael Waffen. I'm the chairman of a local selectman. First of all, I just, you know, when Kevin told me this was a topic tonight, it's being a descendant of family members from Southie. My mother's a longtime South Boston resident, so we've always been fascinated by the story, and then the stories that you hear from people in Southie when you go there, and I'd visit my grandparents and my uncles and stuff like that. So it's really fascinating, and I. Admittedly, I haven't seen the stage production yet.
It was only one.
One show. So.
There was only one show.
All right,
so, there were a lot of people who didn't see
all right,
it yet.
Well, so I'm not alone, but, yep. But if it comes back, I'd love to see it. But with that being said, you know, when Kevin mentioned about Neil McDonough, you know, what was it like working with a Hollywood veteran like that, leading a cast?
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing gift for all of us. You know, Neil and I go back 35 years. We went to high school together on Cape Cod, and we were close friends, and we've been waiting for three decades to really find the project that we both could work together on. And it was interesting with Neil, you know, what Kevin, you saw and everybody else saw last Tuesday night was a culmination of probably 4 months of Zoom rehearsals, because Neil was in L.A. all of the rest of our cast members. We had a cast of about 23 actors, including Neil. And because Neil couldn't be physically there with the rest of the cast, we were going through Zoom and trying to rehearse that way. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, not working with Neil before, I get to see his transformation, you know, from Neil McDonough to Whitey Bulger, and it was really kind of awe-inspiring to watch it. And one of the things that I think we did well with the production was really deconstructing the mythology about Whitey Bulger. We weren't putting Whitey on stage to glorify Whitey Bulger. We were looking to give, you know, the audience really the raw information and show all of the destruction and the death that Whitey caused, and yet, you know, recognizing that Whitey Bulger always thought of himself as a hero. Mm. And I wanted Neil to really play the character that way and let everybody around him, including the FBI agents, you know, the Noreen Gleason, who was the FBI agent that, you know, ultimately led to the capture of Whitey Bulger, and others deconstruct him and really point out all of the horrific aspects to his personality.
While the words and you know, all the, you know, the outline is yours and Dave's, who led the direction? Because I thought the direction was fantastic.
Yeah, and I want to give a big shout out to our director, Ian Barrett. And Ian Barrett comes from the music video world, and he's an incredibly talented and amazing collaborator, as is his wife and our co-producer, Aaron Hayes. I mean, it was really a kind of a team that put this together. Not only Neil, but Neil's wife, Ruvade McDonough, was instrumental in kind of, you know, getting Neil into character and getting him out here and doing this. And again, you know, we call this the world premiere of Hunting Whitey, because we did think that if we could sell Neil as Whitey Bulger to a Boston audience, then we can sell Neil anywhere as Whitey Bulger. And that's really kind of our next plan here, is to start building up this production and really making it something that we can travel with, not only across the United States, but through Europe too.
I have to say, again, being lucky that I was in the front row.
You were.
Yeah. Able to see, like, you know, the white, you know, you're Whitey and Catherine Grieg, and see how Lynn Holt and,
yes,
and, you know, Neil, how they were able to, there was a believability as to how romantic they were, you know, being on the land together. It was great to watch.
Yeah, and that speaks to the talent of the cast, because we had Neil really on stage at the Wilbur for one day, and that was the day of the performance. So we had only time to do one run-through, basically a dress rehearsal before, you know, the stage lights hit, and we were live in front of a sold-out house. So amazingly, you know, our incredible cast and our director and all the stage crew, you know, pulled off something pretty phenomenal.
So, you know, you get to the first half. What's it like, you know, during the intermission? Is it a matter of just kind of making sure everybody's kind of on the same page, right? We're doing good here. What was the atmosphere backstage?
Yeah, it's keeping everybody's energy up, and I don't think we needed to do much. Everybody was really, you know, working together, and it's, you know, it's an amazing group and an ensemble acting troupe that obviously Dave and I, you know, have worked with in the past. We want to continue to work with these talented actors, and as I mentioned, you know, our director Ian Barrett. So there was a great camaraderie behind the scenes, and everybody was lifting each other up. And I'll tell you, you know, it's about a 90-minute stage play, and that 90 minutes goes so fast, you know, because Dave and I were the only actors or narrators on stage for all 90 minutes, because we wanted to give Neil a bit of a breather between some of his scenes, because they're so emotional and so intense, and we were able to provide that, you know, authoritative connective tissue between the stories, and I think it worked.
So you talked briefly there about how emotional and intense it was for the actors and for Neil McDonough specifically playing Whitey Bulger. You did this play at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. I imagine a lot of the people in the audience might have had some, Whitey Bulger might have had some effect on their lives. How did they respond to it, and how did they receive the show overall?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because we were getting some calls from the audience cheering on Whitey Bulger at times in the play, which was really odd. Mm. And Dave and I were looking at each other, and we were kind of whispering, are they cheering Neil, or are they cheering Whitey? And it turns out, I think they were cheering Whitey Bulger. Oh, yeah. No matter how, you know, how many derogatory comments all of the other characters threw at Whitey Bulger and exposed all of the, you know, crimes and corruption and the death and the murder and destruction that he, you know, he built during his career, you know, there are pockets of the audience that still idolized him no matter what we said about him. So, you know, but I do think, you know, we also created a character based on one of Whitey Bulger's victims. And I think it was a really haunting performance given by a very talented actress, Christine Moan. And I think it resonated with the audience, because we wanted to show the audience, you know, this isn't Jack Nicholson on stage. This is Whitey Bulger, and here are his victims. And they're going to haunt you in the seats that you're sitting in. And as I said, I think our actors really, you know, played that part of the show with sensitivity and respect.
I thought it was interesting hearing people say, we love you, Whitey, but there were a few people I heard, like, yell, rat. You know what I mean? I'm like, wow.
Yeah, you know, it's a Boston audience, you know? Yeah. I don't think we're going to get that, you know, on Broadway or L.A. We were looking for that type of visceral reaction from
you
people
might get that.
That
yeah. You might get that. There's a lot of transplants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I think, you know, it takes a Boston audience to really come together like that. We had Steve Sweeney as part of the cast. And, you know, one of the things that we did, I think, well, was sprinkle in some moments of levity and comedy, because there is absurdity in any criminal case that you report on or cover, and you know, we couldn't just provide, you know, terror and destruction to the audience for 90 minutes. We had to give them a ride and give them a journey, and you know, Kevin, you were sitting in the front row, so I'd be interested in your reaction and response.
No, it was fantastic, and also knowing, it's fun, you mentioned Steve Sweeney, who is, you know, people were hooting and hollering. They love him from his stand-up. And let's not forget, he's done stuff with the Farley Brothers. He's he's a known commodity. Gary Tangway, you know, the bumbling, you know, individual from, you know, the place that, what was he like, the manager of where?
Yeah, the apartment manager.
The apartment manager. He's kind of the bumbling dude. And he just, you know, Gary Tangway, if anybody knows from, you know, the sports world. And you know, he did a fantastic job. I just thought it was great watching and listening, not only what was going on stage. I'm somebody, my head's on a swivel, and I listen to the different people who would say stuff. They whisper. The people next to me were like, oh, that guy was a scumbag. I'm like, wow. It's like, you know, hearing people talking and the mumbling, and like I said, it was just fantastic knowing that the believability that people were so emotional about it. And they weren't just taking it as individuals coming out and you know talking, saying their lines that they had rehearsed, so that people were really taking this show in. And I'll be interested to see if this is something that you're going to do multiple shows just to kind of see what, you know, the audience, see how well received this will be, and maybe this could be something that you can tour the country with.
I think that's obviously something that we're looking at, very strongly right now. I mean, we sold out the Wilbur Theater in 2 hours. Mm. So we know that we can do multiple performances in Boston, whether that's at the Wilbur, whether that's at the Box Center. But we also know we have something very special in Neil McDonough starring as Whitey Bulger.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Neil McDonough, you know, really embracing that character and, creating something new with it, you know, something that John Depp couldn't bring to it in Black Mass, something that Jack Nicholson, as great as he is, couldn't bring to it in, you know, the fictional piece, The Departed. So I think, you know, Neil recognizes there's a lot of gold to continue to mine here.
Yep.
And we're just going to continue to, you know, work on the production, elevate the production values. I mean, we did this show on basically no budget at all, and that was the genius of Ian Barrett and his team, really creating this multi-media, presentation. I don't think people understood that was going to be part of the show, which was what we loved. I mean, we always loved to get the reaction from the audience, because that's what theater is. It sparks a reaction from people in the audience. And if you can captivate an audience for 90 minutes, you know, that's saying something. And we're really proud of that.
Yeah, quick ticket. I know Mike has something he wants to ask, but tip of the cap to a friend, Alex and Lisa Bzanson, who were kind enough to invite me to go to this. I'm like, you know, when he asked me, I'm like, I gotta move my plans around. This is something I want to see, because I saw the previous vignettes that you had done last April. I will say that I like the bit of an homage to the Departed, and having Neil kind of, you know, as Whitey, ponder, basically talk about, you know, these likenesses of him, and him kind of, you know, reveling in the fact that, you know, movies are being made and, you know, in about him, so to speak.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that, you know, much of Whitey's dialogue in the play comes exactly from Whitey Bulger himself, yeah. Because Dave and I got access to 70 letters that Bulger wrote in his own hand in prison. So when he's talking about The Departed or Black Mass and Johnny Depp, that's not us creating dialogue for Whitey. That's Whitey writing letters to a pen pal. So we're able to harvest a lot of that material and turn it into, you know, dialogue and monologue for a very talented actor like Neil.
So just go back to Neil McDonough for a second. You had mentioned how you saw the transformation from Neil McDonough to Whitey Bulger, and how taxing a performance like that is on the audience and on the actors. How difficult is it for an actor like Neil McDonough to come out of being that character after having been that character for 90 minutes and for months leading up to it?
Yeah, you know, and you're right. It was months that he was, you know, starting to get into character and grow into character. I mean, again, you know, going back to the first Zoom rehearsal, you know, he's just reading his lines, so he's not emoting, or he's not, you know, but I could see something turning in his head in terms of how he was going to approach the character. And every Zoom rehearsal, he revealed a little bit more of the Whitey Bulger he was going to play on stage. And by the time I got him into Boston, he was Whitey Bulger. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, and Neil's the most affable, friendly human being that is you could possibly meet. But when he turns it on, you know, you're not talking to Neil, you're talking to Whitey. And there is a bit of method acting there, but Neil's such a great guy that he can kind of shut it off and compartmentalize it. But we've had conversations since last Tuesday night, and it's a part that still is sticking to him. And, you know, he loves the role. It's a role that he feels like he was meant to play. And we want to, you know, continue to draw draw that amazing performance out of him.
So we just get 2 minutes left. Anything in closing in regarding this, the Hunting Whitey stage adaptation, or maybe even some new news on some of the things you're working on?
No, I appreciate that, Kevin. Well, with the WGA strike, everything's kind of slowing down mm-hmm. in Hollywood, which allows us to really focus on theatrical and Hunting Whitey, which I think we're going to put a lot of our emphasis on, over the next coming, few weeks and few months. And then when the WGA strike resolves, and it will, then we get right back into pre-production on Helltown, which is the Amazon Studios limited series that we hope to shoot here on Cape, in Massachusetts next year, starring Oscar Isaac and directed by Edward Berger. So, the great thing about Dave and I is that we just surround ourselves with so much talent, and it makes us look good at the end of the day. So I think all of our collective projects have a great shelf life and a great future based on the people we bring in to help tell that story.
Well, again, I want to thank you for always being willing to discuss some of the things, the great projects that you are working on, and what the future holds, and we look forward to more conversation with you down the road somewhere.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
You got it. There he is. Casey Sherman, best-selling author, and talking a little bit about his stage adaptation of Hunting Whitey. We are going to step aside. Hour number one, gone. Where the heck did it go? That's all right. Hour number two will keep you satisfied. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
WBMS Brockton. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. We are back here on Monday Night Talk. Coming up later this hour, Michelle McGrath from McGrath PR. Talk about all the great fun summer things that are happening, whether it's at the James Library or Company Theater or in Plymouth, you name it. But right now, you can talk about your local council on aging centers. Joining us, now, I don't know if we have Julie. Yeah, Julie.
I'm here.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
Hello. Good. Thanks for having me.
So Julie Burke is she's in Rockland as the director, Council on Aging director. And then we have Tammy Murray, and she has a more prestige. You're like community director of blah blah blah. You also do elder affairs, lots of things.
Community
services. And then Gretchen Emmets, and she is the COA director in Pembroke. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Don't forget, pull that close to you.
Thank you.
Who wants to go first? Just to kind of tell us a little bit about your centers and how they're doing at this stage of the year.
I think we should have Julie go first.
Sure.
Julie, so tell us a little bit about what is going on in Rockland in the Council on Aging. And don't be shy, because Mike O'Loughlin is here and he's listening.
Hey, Mike.
No pressure, Julie.
So let me first just say thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be able to share a few minutes, about what's going on in Rockland. I will also briefly share that I just started back in November, so just about 6 months ago.
Nice.
A lot of our programs have been consistent throughout the years. Next month will be 9 years that our center is opened. And we offer everything from, like the other two, you know, exercise classes, educational programming, trips. We go on lots of trips. You name it, we have it. We're really busy. We serve a hot, balanced meal every day, Monday through Friday. So that always brings a crowd. And, yeah, feel free to ask me any specific questions, anything you're curious about. Or
well, we'll do it in a group setting. You'll each get a chance to kind of chip away at whatever we'll ask. We'll go with Tammy next. Just tell us how everything is in Hanover.
Oh, things have been great. They've been great. It's been very busy. As we all do pretty much the same types of programming, we've shifted a lot towards behavioral health and more of a social work approach at our center, helping people that are in need. One thing I'd like to stress to whoever listens is come to us before everything goes really bad, because it gives us a better opportunity to help out where we can. Hanover has some great programs available. Such as we have clinical social workers on staff that do free therapy for residents as well as veterans. That's been a great program for the last year. And we just added pickleball. That's huge.
Kind of like a
thing. but yeah, things have been really good.
Gretchen.
Hi, thanks for having me. So, Pembroke, we've been busy and we've been building. So, we're really excited about that. The new community center that will probably open next March. So, that's something that we really kind of fought hard for, and I think will be great for maybe bringing in that younger senior that a lot of us don't tap into right now. We try. I mean, we have exercise. We're doing Spanish class over the summer in the evenings. We're also doing a music series once a month in the evenings, on Monday evenings during the summer. So we try everything we possibly can with the limited space that we have now.
Mike, I'm hogging the microphone here. You wanna throw the next question at these ladies?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I ask anytime I interview somebody. So I think Julie's already actually answered this question for me, but you can feel free to answer it as well, Julie. We're seeing people living a lot longer and people retiring a lot younger, and we're seeing, you know, when I was younger, 55-year-old guy who was wearing orthopedic shoes and light blue pants and maybe golfing as exercise. Now they're still playing men's softball. So what are you guys doing from a town perspective, council perspective, to attract those younger seniors and make the centers viable for all people over 55 years old?
You want me to go first?
You can go first, Tammy.
So we are open 3 nights a week, on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. We're open until 8 p.m. For both planned events and hoping that people will come in and want more information. We have had rock bands practice there that brings in a younger crowd. We've had dinners with swing dancing. We have a history series. In fact, we have one coming up in June about the Clark Airport, which is now a neighborhood in Hanover. So we try to bring people in. We used to do a book series that was really great, but it seems that people that are in the 55 age range still have kids that are playing sports. So it's really difficult to get them off the fields and into the center. I also oversee the Parks and Rec Department for the town of Hanover. So we have a softball team. We have food trucks on Tuesday where they have concerts and live entertainment. So it's really kind of spread out for me.
Hanover's rocking.
It is.
Yeah, and I want to say, we're saying that people are living longer. That's true. But we're also finding that there's more younger people with Alzheimer's or dementia. So that's been one of our focuses too. We have every Tuesday a program for caregivers and the client, because of the fact that they really need the support. And they're people that are my age, and I just turned 58. Yeah. So, you know, they're younger. So we're finding, even though they're living longer, we're having more issues like that for them. But we do the same that everyone else, that Julie does, that Tammy does. We do the evening hours with the programs and try to bring in people after work. And, you know, it's a lot of people, even in their 70s, are still working, quite honestly.
It's the economy. Yep. There's not much you can do.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to add quickly.
Please.
So something I find interesting, too, is a lot of times we'll see those mid-50s maybe coming in with a parent, bringing them to a program or maybe getting help with, you know, Medicare or Medicaid. And then they kind of take a look around and they're like, hey, wait, this is really cool. Can I come here? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And then we kind of get them in that way, too. I'm like, yeah, just come in on your break for a cup of coffee or, you know, take that exercise class or, you know, any other programming we might have. And I feel like lately we've seen a lot of that. And it just opens their eyes up to, oh, yeah, because at 55, we do still feel young, right? So it's kind of that funny stage of life.
Yeah, guilty. I'm like sitting here, Mike saying like, you know, a guy who's like 55 years old and he's got, well, Mike, I don't have orthopedic shoes, but I am.
No.
I'm in that age, but is it the stigmatism? I mean, you think of council on aging,
yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
That's for
yeah.
People who are like, rah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead. Julie?
Oh, I think they're shocked, truly, just like with Gretchen and Tammy's faces, and they walk in and they expect to see exactly what Mike described, and it's completely opposite. You know, there's a game of chess going on, or they're doing Zumba, or, you know, playing on the iPad. So they're like, oh, wait, this is cool, and I can come here, you know?
Is it possibly something that... that could be done to better, I don't say market, but I mean, to kind of change, you know, you think, again, Council on Aging, is there not a way for better marketing for what it is that the centers do? Maybe a change of name or something? I mean, is that something that a lot of...
Rebranding.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And
I couldn't spit it out because, you know, I'm at that age where you forget things. It's right there.
You had it surrounded.
I have a program for that on Tuesdays. So if you want...
I'll be there.
With the new community center, that's one of my goals is to try and rebrand. So when we go into the community center, we're more intergenerational and not just, you know, the senior center. It's an active center for learning.
But is that the problem? Is that, again, you said senior center.
Right.
How can your centers rebrand? Has there been any discussion, whether it's here in the South Shore, is there a state level, you know, organization that is kind of a trade organization that could say, hey, this is what we can do. Is it grant money to kind of find a way to rebrand?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I know Plymouth changed to the Center for Active Living. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Years back. And I don't think the stigma of the senior center has worn off. Never mind, seniors like to be called older adults now, so you can't have an older adult center. I don't know if there's grant money available, but I do know when I did have somebody in marketing for us, it's how we met, Kevin, actually.
Yep.
We had a whole different crowd, a lot more excitement, but you need that person who's there at least 20 hours
stoke
a week.
Stoke the fire.
To, yeah, really get it out there.
And to change it around. I mean, we tried it before.
Yep.
At a different location in Kingston, and it was tough to get the older adults to want to change it because they felt that would be bringing in other people that they didn't want, maybe.
Yeah, and a lot of seniors, older adults, feel slighted because a lot of the tax money goes to schools or to sports organizations, and they always feel like they're not getting enough money, and in many cases that's true. So when you open it up to younger, like, 25-year-olds, it does cause a stir.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't go as far as 25. I'm not sure that, you know, definitely the 25-year-olds. But to that point, I mean, if you're 55, I think to what's kind of been said is you don't realize that you're a senior.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of pushing that back. You're trying to push that stigmatism off and push that off as long as you can. But there are some that might go there and might be looking to the center as a place of refuge for them. And I think that's some of the trouble where people are running into is how do you market to that younger generation that is also a senior? You know, they're not 85.
Yep. Plus retain the folks who are, you know, not as young.
Yeah, I think their biggest draw right now for that age group is pickleball.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
So. And that's actually run through our rec department in Pembroke. So
Why is it so popular? What is it about whacking that little ball that's like a wiffle ball? Anybody? Anybody?
I'm not sure. I watched them play it
as did I
10 years ago at the Kingston Rec Center. And then I went and saw some older adults playing, and I watched a woman roll her ankle and jump right back up and start playing again. And I was like, what is this? Like, sit down. You know, but it's crazy. And there are a lot of younger people playing it now. I have not hit the 55 bracket. I'm just going to say that out loud. But I try to add things that interest people my age. And Julie was right. A lot of times I get the adult children bringing their parent in, and it ends up that we went to school together or something, and then that kind of draws them in. Yeah. But it is definitely challenging.
Yeah, I think both, you know, I'm not sure about Julie, but both Tammy and I have brought in, like, mindfulness and things that just kind of bring you back to yourself to take a breath. We have grief support groups. I have a really active dull men's group.
I think I might have had one of your members, John Brown.
Who is
I wouldn't call him dull to his face, but he's actually mentioned. But we've talked about it. We've had the conversation, and John's like, "Yeah, I'm part of this club." And I'm like, "Okay, then." And that's as far as the conversation went. I want to kind of roll things back for half a second here. Earlier this month, it was announced that COVID is no longer a thing. Are things back to normal in your respective centers? We'll start with you, Gretchen.
So I guess it depends on what normal is. I think that we learned a lot during COVID.
We did.
We had to manage things totally different ways.
Be creative.
Yeah, we really did, and think outside the box. So I don't know if we'll ever go back to normal, but I can tell you, like, a month and a half ago, the numbers for COVID were up again, and it was horrible. And even those people had their vaccinations, because we did them, and we know it. People still are coming in if they're not feeling well, and they're still spreading COVID around. So that's always going to be something to do. But we see our numbers have really increased, and my transportation numbers have really increased. So people are getting out there and, starting to enjoy life again, and we really had to reach out to some folks, because you get told don't go out for 2 years, they're not going to go out. So it's been kind of a struggle mental health wise that way.
Julie, how about you? What do you think about in regards to COVID?
I agree. I would say our numbers are higher than ever at this point. Folks are coming back out. But you do still see the occasional, someone coming in with a little cough. We always have masks on the desk just in case they want them. We still have the free COVID test if anybody wants them. But like you said, they've declared it not really a thing right now. So do you go about it like a cold or a flu? I don't know. But numbers wise, folks are out again. I think they're happy, and things are busier than ever.
Tammy?
So it's opened up a lot of doors. I think there, unfortunately, were a lot of positives that came out of COVID. In Hanover specifically, we have the Mobile Integrated Health Program, where we work very closely with our visiting nurses, the fire department, the police department. And it has uncovered a lot of those unreachable people that I always talk about when I come on the show.
True,
There's a huge benefit, but it has also brought out a lot of the mental health issues for the people that did stay home and did isolate and now are struggling to get back out into the world or catch up on their bills or whatever they need to do.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, we got a great conversation going on. I actually have coined it the Council on Aging Summer Program Update segment. We'll have to rebrand that somewhere down the road. On the phone, Julie Burke, who is the director in Rockland. We have Tammy Murray, who is wears many hats, but she also directs leads direction in Hanover. And then Gretchen Emmets, who is in Pembroke. And I want to say a quick shout-out to your person I called Friday. Is it Maria?
Marie
was fantastic when I called. It's great when I call one of your respective centers and I get, whether I get like Julie I was able to speak with or Marie who did a nice job or anytime that I've called whatever center you were at, previously Kingston, now Hanover, and usually there's fantastic folks who are willing to give information and give assistance. Do you have a follow-up question, Mike?
You know, I mean, obviously we're getting to the point where, you know, Kevin and I were talking earlier. It's been gorgeous weather.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the point where it's really oppressively hot at some point. What do you guys have? What do you offer? What programs does the Senior Center or Council on Aging, what are we calling it now? Yeah. We'll get to,
Life Beyond 45 Center.
45 now? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just spitballing here.
What should the demographic know that you guys offer to assist with the hotter weather coming up?
Do you want me to start?
You could start, yes. I was actually going to go back to Julie, but you can start.
Sorry, Julie.
No, that's
cool. So Hanover has, I call it a CERT team, but the T in CERT means team, so people get aggravated with that. But they work closely with the fire department. It's a group of volunteers that are ready to open shelters at any point in the time of a heat or a snow emergency. I work closely with Carol Mattis, who is the lead on that group, and we'll open up the center any day of the week, anytime. We transport, we have people that can drive the vans if a driver isn't available to get people to the center to get what they need. They're usually provided with food or a charging station or just the AC. But I do remind everyone to drink water because I think a lot of times we forget.
Gretchen.
So, yeah, same thing as Tammy. We're open for a cooling center all the time. When it's hot out, and we'll put out announcements, we'll have the town put out announcements. When the snow storms hit and you're stuck at home with no power, we'll feed you, we'll keep you warm, we'll put a movie on. The whole center kind of turns into just one big place to go to feel comfortable. And you'll find that there may be another center that's open, say the library for that, but the older adult really likes to come in to where they feel comfortable, so they'll come over to us.
Mm-hmm. Julie?
Yeah, I'm going to jump right on there. Both Tammy and Gretchen, I work closely with the fire chief, and we often, you know, talk throughout the winter, and then with the summer coming up, we're also used as a cooling center or a warming center in the winter. We do have a full kitchen, so we can serve food as well. And then, you know, the folks we do know that are homebound, if we can, you know, get to them at some point throughout the day, we'll absolutely do that as well.
I would ask you each how essential, how important is either social media or a newsletter getting the word out about your respective centers? We'll start with Julie.
Yeah, very, very, very important. We actually, in Rockland, when we switched over, when Peggy, my former boss, retired, and I took over, we had an issue with our social media, and I didn't realize how popular it was until we didn't have it anymore. But it is back up and running. But they look for that. They look for the updates, what's happening, you know, the fun stuff and you know, if the cooling center, the information. And newsletter as well. We send ours out bi-monthly. If for whatever reason they moved or maybe they threw it away, they're right back in to grab a paper copy. They love it. It is online as well, but I think in Rockland, we still like our paper copies.
Now, do you have a name for yours?
It's called the Rockland Review, and you can find it on the Town of Rockland website.
Gretchen, I don't know if you know this or not, but radio is not a visual medium, so nobody knows what the hell I'm doing. Gretchen, what's the name of your newsletter, and what, do you have one?
Yes, we do. We send it out monthly. It's called The Pioneer. Ooh. And I also want to say that shows like this and PAC TV really help us out getting the word out.
And Tammy?
Hanover Happenings is our monthly newsletter. And we do use social media a lot. We're going to be adding to Instagram as well to do little short videos for people.
Yay.
And it's really important, and it's great that we have somebody who can share on multiple pages. So once we put something up, it goes on the town site, it goes on all the groups. So it's really important.
Okay. Anything that myself or Mike have not asked you, but you feel is kind of crucial or important that you share with the listeners who might be in your respective towns? Gretchen.
I just think that people should know that it's a free service, the Council on Aging. Someone said, oh, but it's doesn't it cost $5 to join? Our friends group is $5, but that's a separate group. But going to the senior center or wherever is free to come in. Most of our classes, exercise classes, are $5.
Favorite four-letter word, free.
So true.
Tammy?
I'm going to plug the Old Colony Elder Services March Against Elder Abuse that is happening in Plymouth.
Fantastic.
On June 21st. Hanover is going to be sending a team. Gretchen stated that Pembroke's going to be sending a team. Hanover's going to give T-shirts and whatnot and make a real big show of it. We have a lot of people in the walking group that are super excited to go down.
How important is it to recognize that seniors aren't necessarily taking as good of care as they should be?
It's really important. It's imperative that people understand what abuse really looks like. I think we've had shows on this before, mm-hmm. where we've gotten really deep into it. But a lot of times you might think, you know, your neighbor and their kid have just a rough relationship, and meanwhile...
Who knows what's going on behind closed doors?
Yep.
Julie?
Yeah, I would say to any listeners, you know, come out, take advantage. It is a free program. We offer so many. Again, some of the classes are a few dollars here and there. We have a couple of great presentations coming up. We have on May 30th at 10 a.m. we have a panel of five professionals from lawyers and realtors talking about estate law. That's, you know, again, no charge. We have a Ask the Lawyer, you know, once at the end of the month, take advantage of that. He's also doing a free presentation on the subject of simple wills on June 20th at 2. Nice. So again, get on the social media. We're on Facebook now only. Look at the Rockland Review and find out about all these programs and take advantage.
I want to thank the three of you for being so kind with your time. To be here or to be able to be a part of the conversation, we should probably reconvene our little round table here, maybe towards the fall, maybe in August.
Sure, absolutely.
For anything that might be happening.
Absolutely.
Anything happening in the fall. Maybe we might add, if we want to add another member of a local council on aging, we can do that as well. We just kind of keep it a nice circle like this.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you for having us all the time.
It's the idea of the radio
program.
We really
appreciate it. Thank you.
Getting the word out about the community. So
absolutely. So thank you very much.
You got it. Julie Burke, Tammy Murray, and Gretchen Emmets, thank you so much for joining. I'm going to step aside. I'm going to close out strong. Shel McGrath, McGrath PR, coming up in just a moment here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, Tiny, I got a testimonial here from Trisha Malloy. She says, thank you so much for getting the Jeep windshield in so quickly. We were heading to our annual Jimmy Buffett concert weekend when, pop, a rock breaks the windshield. PETA was right on it.
You embarrass me with praise. My boys would have done a good job even if it were a Barry Manilow weekend. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. Actually, I kind of like Barry Manilow.
You do?
My wife likes Barry Manilow. That's why I like Barry Manilow.
Smart man.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
This Saturday, May 27th, stop by Black Hat Brew Works in Bridgewater for a fundraiser to benefit Operation Healing Our Heroes, support for the Home Base Foundation. From 12 noon till 10 p.m., it's fun for the entire family, including face painting, raffles, games, and more. Food provided by Wicked Flavor Food Truck and Lolly Jolly Waffles. And live music from Bert Schwart and the Wildflower Dub Squad, Craig DeMello, the Whiskey Poet, John Belutis, and Shove. For more details, search Healing Our Heroes on Facebook.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Final segment of Monday Night Talk. Mike, I'm going to thank you for being a great co-host.
Oh, thanks for having me. Anytime.
We move forward, and a good friend, Michelle McGrath, I get some sad news before we get into our discussion of some of the great things that are happening here on the South Shore. I had to buy a new hot tub, inflatable.
Oh.
I've been chasing a leak on the hot tub, and I finally got. Just said, "Uncle, said," so I bought same one.
Okay.
Same one. It's fantastic. Love it on my deck. Just for some reason, it's just. I patched it.
Didn't work, huh?
Didn't work. So finally just said, I'm going to get another one.
And that's why you're not going to the senior center, because you're sitting in your hot tub on the deck all summer.
Don't hate on me, man.
I'm just saying.
Don't hate on me. Listen, I love my backyard, me, my bees. We're going. We got it going on.
There you go.
So welcome back to the radio
Thank
program,
so
Michelle.
Thank you so much, sir. It's always a joy to be here.
For folks that don't know, you are, you know, talk to me about the public relations that you do and the many different organizations that you serve and that you help get the word out about what it is that they do and what they're offering.
Yeah, I don't actually have a count off the top of my head. I'll have to do that one of these
days. That's not a bad thing if you can't count. So many, you have so much going on. It's awesome.
It's really wonderful. Yes, I get to help raise visibility for nonprofits, small business, and especially arts and cultural organizations across the South Shore, New England, and the entire continent, quite frankly. So we have lots of things always to talk about. Thank you.
You got that. I would give you a hard copy of some of the items that you sent me that we're going to talk about.
Wonderful. I appreciate it.
You got it. I thought we could start things off. It's interesting. I had a great conversation, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. In regards to the James Library and Center for the Arts.
That's right, yes.
It was pre-Mother's Day.
Yes, they had a big cabaret weekend. Yeah, very exciting.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Director was awesome to have her on.
Mm-hmm.
Another event coming up.
So they always have such an amazing and diverse programming at the James Library, located in Norwell, but it serves the entire South Shore. And this is one of those places that always brings in homegrown locals to talk about, do presentations or sometimes music or definitely fine art events. If you haven't been there, you want to visit. It's a wonderful place. Right in the heart of Norwell Center District. And local writer Chris Harridan is coming to present the history of Paragon Park.
Oh my goodness.
And it's, you know, if you live in the South Shore, Paragon Park is a household name, right? I mean, it means summer on the South Shore in the history of it anyway. So Chris actually grew up literally in the right in the shadow of Paragon Park's giant roller coaster. And from his home on the hill behind the park, he learned the stories of Paragon, and he had all this history from his grandfather, who was a park employee there. And he just had a first job there as in the Penny Arcade. And so all of these parts of his own history have spun this amazing story to tell a history of the park in a wonderful presentation. So that's coming up on Sunday, June 4th at 3:00 at the James Library and Center for the Arts in Norwell.
Wow. So, and besides just talking about Paragon Park, and realized that he actually did something in regards to probably one of the greatest, depending on how old you are.
Right.
It was one of those storms that, you know, if you were a kid, you celebrated because we were out of school for a while. Because we were digging out for it. Like months, not
literally.
Literally. No, I mean, we were digging out, and you know, it was one of those storms that kind of stopped everything in its tracks.
So true. It really did. I'll never forget that storm. And here is Chris lending his expertise to another fascinating topic that is also timeless. People never get tired of talking about Paragon Park or about that blizzard of 78, for sure.
Yeah, and not to mention, he's also, not only is he an author, mm-hmm. but he's also somebody who writes for a local scribe as well,
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, he has so many skills and is well known around the whole South Shore, for sure.
Interesting. Let's talk a little on ballet.
Yes.
The South Shore Ballet Theater. There's something interesting as far as with the Asian American Ballet Project, right?
Yes, this is brand new. Asian American Ballet Project is the very first ever Asian American Ballet Company, and they are in residence this summer at South Shore Ballet Theater. And so as they are preparing to, train dancers and launch their company, they're also
presenting a debut performance of their first project called Beginnings, and that's being held in Cambridge at the Multicultural Arts Center on Friday, July 7th, with two performances at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., but they are local in residence all summer at the Ballet Theater and will definitely draw a lot of interest from local dance fans, for sure.
Let's talk about the summer dance program that they actually offer.
Sure, yeah. So summer dance is like, first of all, South Shore Ballet Theater is the region's only pre-professional ballet studio, and it's located right in Hingham, and they offer exceptional programs for dancers of all skill levels. You do not have to be a professional dancer to take lessons or classes there, and there's always parents looking for opportunities for camps for their kids over
Mike,
the summer.
What do you think? You think your kids would do this?
Yeah, I don't know. Mine are 15 and 13. They're at the point where they're just
it's 7 to 18.
I think they're big. Thing is the pool during the summer and stuff like that. But my youngest, she used to do dancing a lot when she was younger. So,
well, there's wonderful faculty at these programs, and they are offering not only daily ballet classes, but that includes all the things like variations, point, modern, musical theater, jazz, tap, hip-hop, yoga, and conditioning. So there's a lot of opportunity there. There's several sessions. One of the first sessions starts on July 10th, runs Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The second session starts on July 31st, also runs Monday through Friday, and a 9 a.m. to 12 noon program. And those are for students all the way from ages 7 to 18, and they break that down into leveled classes. So lots of things going on there. Their studios are super, centrally located right near the highway in Hingham.
Is this something that, if you're creative enough, if you are able to promote this enough, that this could be something that could be signed up and to be all the spots filled relatively quickly?
It absolutely could be. I mean, they have a wonderful following at that company, and usually by the time summer approaches, that's when all of the parents are panicking, right? Everybody's
right.
Like, oh my gosh, I forgot to sign my kid up for something to do this summer. And so yes, this will fill up early, so you definitely want to think about that early. And you can learn more by visiting their website, SouthShoreBalletTheater.com. Very comprehensive website, lots of details, or even just stop into their studios. It's so easy, right inside the industrial park in Hingham. It's just right around the curb off the highway. Super easy access.
I mean, it seems like a fantastic enrichment program for a kid to kind of take up during the summer and learn a little dance.
Definitely, for sure.
Let's I know we've talked about the Americana Theater Company. I don't remember talking about the Studio Americana.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, I'd love to. So first of all, Americana Theater Company is based in Plymouth. They often produce shows at the Plymouth Center for the Arts or, of course, at the Spire Center, one of my favorite places on the planet. And so this summer they're producing Big Fish the Musical. This company is known for the high quality, very engaging performances. The Spire Center is a great location to have a really nice summertime trip for theater entertainment on the South Shore. You don't have to go to Boston. You don't have to pay for this crazy amount of parking. It's super easy to access it. And this is a fun, spunky, humorous musical that was based on the acclaimed film that was directed by Tim Burton of the same name, Big Fish. So really, really funny story of Edward Bloom, a traveling salesman who lives his life to the fullest and then some. So if you love a big, funny, splashy musical as part of your summer entertainment, you're going to want to check that out down at the Spire Center from July 14th through the 30th. They have shows from Thursdays through Saturdays at 7 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. And you can learn more about that at AmericanaTheater.org. And also, they also have a wonderful program for their younger students, where they actually have kids that come from the area and do summer programs, and they produce shows with the kids in these short like little stints of 1 to 2 weeks of camps. Kids sign up, they're there at a day camp, and at the end of it, they're producing a full-fledged musical or play. It's really wonderful. So this summer, they're doing Junie B. Jones, and as well as drawing a blank on the second one. We'll have to go look at their website.
Gretchen, who's just here, says that they have actually on Tuesdays, they have a program for you and I to go to.
it was early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was fighting that battle at around 7:10 tonight. Mike's like, you surrounded it. You just didn't necessarily.
He's looking for the word rebranding.
Rebranding. Yeah. I just couldn't. It was right there.
Yeah. I think their second program is Mean Girls the Musical. So they have
I think you're right.
Leveled in two.
Was that a segue talking from Gretchen?
No.
I'm like, wow, okay.
No. It was great having
great.
Gretchen, Tammy, and Julia as part of that lesson.
Mean Girls the Musical.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very popular musical and about bullying and things like that. So it has a current theme that people are very attentive to, especially in the teen years. So
I have to say, I'm amazed and wowed by the number of theater companies that are here on the South Shore.
Mm-hmm.
We got in a bit probably to close out the show. We're going to talk about probably the crown jewel of theater companies here on the South Shore.
Nice things to talk about with that
company theater, but just knowing that there, you don't have to travel. And I feel redundant because I say this every time. I'm talking with a local theater group or a theater company that's here on the South Shore, you know, putting on a production, is that, you know, you can actually feel the work that they put in.
Right.
And I've had the privilege to be able to speak with some individuals from the Americana Theater Company about some of the things that they've done.
Right.
It's great. I know I'm kind of being a homer here, but I like the idea that we have this here, and it's not necessarily something that we have to take a 45-minute trip into Boston and pay the exorbitant fees for a great meal and to park, you know, and then come out afterwards and go, was it worth $400?
Right.
Maybe not.
Right. I totally agree. Or like people that went over to Gillette last night over the weekend and paid a few $1,000s.
Well, I think if you did the measurement between Saturday and Sunday, I think the people who went Sunday, I think they'll both parties who went and saw Taylor Swift were happy, but I don't know if I'd want to dance. I saw the Foo Fighters 5 years ago, and it rained on and off. I was okay with it because the Foo Fighters put on an amazing performance.
Right.
But if it rained the whole time, I don't know if I'd be like, yay, 3 hours. I just don't.
So this is a really sore topic in my house right now because we did not get tickets for my kids when they first
blame Ticketmaster.
My wife tried, but you know, apparently
the bots got them first.
We don't like our kids enough to spend thousands upon thousands of dollars, spend a mortgage payment on Taylor Swift tickets.
Well, allegedly there was a family that spent $21,000 for tickets. Well, if you want to see that artist, I mean, you know, I know people who will pay to go all over the world to see an artist because, you know what, I've seen the artist 27 times, and the 28th will be just as good as the first 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but my daughters did figure out that she's still got some more tours. She's got some more shows across the country. So
she's young.
So she's still...
She'll be back.
So we're still looking, Kevin. We're still looking. She closes out in late August. So we might be in Inglewood, California
Road
for
trip.
The final show. So it's like...
Road trip.
That's what we're doing now.
Of course, that's the voice of Michael Laughlin, my co-host. And of course, we have Michelle McGrath, the great Michelle McGrath, who wears so many different hats. and we're here just talking about some of the people that she helps or that she works with in regards to getting the word out about their programs and their shows.
Right.
An organization that I know that you participate in from time to time.
Often do,
and I wouldn't be surprised if you aren't going to be part of one of these concerts. Pilgrim Festival Chorus Concert Summer Series. Maybe Mike and I might have to take a road trip.
Fun stuff. You won't have to go far. They're performing all
That's
over the
That's what's great.
South
I'm
Shore.
Looking. I'm seeing Citroen. I'm seeing Plymouth. Plimpton.
Right. So Pilgrim Festival Chorus has a summer ensemble that's known as Pilgrim Festival Singers, and they often sing patriotic or lighter cabaret-style music in the summertime. So this summer, they're focusing on American voices, celebrating our American heritage as a summer concert series. And that's being produced in Scituate, and Plimpton, and two concerts in Plymouth. That American experience, of course, we all know has been very unique, especially in the realm of music. And so this program, American Voices, allows the ensemble to share themes of remembrance, strife, and fun by showcasing folk songs, spirituals, shape note hymns, and songs from across two great American musicals, Ragtime and Guys and Dolls.
Oh, who doesn't love Guys and Dolls?
And both of those musicals, the score on, if you haven't seen Ragtime, you have to go.
Sit down, you're rocking the boat.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a really fun, eclectic mix of music. Lightweight,
nice.
It's not a long concert. They have a couple of the offerings happen at 4 p.m. You can see this concert or listen to this concert in Scituate on June 10th at 4 p.m., in Plimpton on June 11th mm-hmm. at 4 p.m., and then Saturday and Sunday, June 24th and 25th, 7:30 at the Saturday performance, Sunday at 4 p.m. That's down at St. Bonaventure's in Plymouth. Really, really great, light way to enjoy some choral music this summer.
Yeah, and what's great about the times, now, I don't know what the run time of the shows are.
Yes.
But you do either Saturday or Sunday. They're in areas where you can go out and grab something to eat either before or after.
That's right. I've been trying to encourage a lot of my choral clients to have concerts in late afternoon because people really love to go to a concert and then go out to eat afterwards. It's so hard to do it the other way around because you have to try to time everything. You don't know how busy the restaurants are. So this way, you know you've got yourself a nice 1 to 1.5 hour max concert.
Yep.
It's still plenty early enough to go out to dinner afterwards. It's still daylight because it's summertime.
Yeah.
All the good important things.
Yeah, get a snack first because you don't want to be falling asleep if you have like a weighted down with a meal at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
And then you're snoozing by the fourth or fifth installment. You don't want to do that. You want to go out to eat afterwards. What do you think, Mike?
That's a pro move right there.
There you go.
A pro move right there.
And, you know,
like a true professional.
And each of those communities there is great access. You know, Plimpton and Plymouth with everything that's down in Plymouth Harbor. Same thing with Scituate. Scituate Harbor has a million wonderful locally grown, restaurants. Wonderful restaurateurs in our area and that we should all be frequenting to make sure they can stay in business post-pandemic. So,
anything that you want to mention if folks want to find out more about the Pilgrim Festival Chorus?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or purchase tickets?
Right. So you can go to pilgrimfestivalchorus.org to purchase tickets. And also know that PFC participates in the Card to Culture program, which is a collaboration between Mass Cultural Council and the Department of Transitional Assistance, and provides discount or free tickets to people that have financial concerns. So you can look more into that later.
Excellent.
Okay.
Mike?
So I assume this is the one you were talking about, Kevin. The Jail Creme on the South Shore,
yeah.
As far as theater companies go.
That microphone theater, right in front of you.
The Company Theater over in Norwell.
The ladies and gentlemen at home want to hear you.
Nobody could hear that?
No.
Fair enough. So the Company Theater in Norwell, Divas with a Twist, and a lot of other things going on over there this summer.
Right. So they always have lots of things going on. They have an amazing ACT summer workshop that hundreds of kids participate in of all ages every year. They have a great concert coming with Divas with a Twist. Fabulous ensemble in the South Shore, all girl ensemble powerhouse women. They're doing a teen edition of Chicago, but their big debut this summer is an original musical. So we were talking about Paragon Park earlier with Chris Harridan's presentation over at the James Library. This trio team of people over at the Company Theater wrote Paragon Park, the musical, quite a number of years ago. I actually got to help them with PR on that project as well. And so we've watched that come full circle. They've done several, productions of that. And now they've written this new musical called Born to Do This. It's the Joan of Arc rock opera. Really cool stuff. So if you don't know the story of Joan of Arc, she defied all societal norms. She cut her hair. She wore men's clothing. All these things that she accomplished as a teenager. So as she was put to death for wearing men's clothes at that time, which seems so relevant today because you wouldn't see that happen today, right?
Right.
It's a different era, 600 years ago we're talking. So she was later declared innocent of the things that she was being accused of and canonized as a saint. So this team of people over at the Company Theater have created this amazing rock opera. So if you don't know what a rock opera is, it's basically a musical that tells a fun and entertaining story that is completely sung through. So there's not really any spoken word in this. It's all singing. So can you imagine composing an entire work that's all music? There's no space in there for anything else. So it's all local people that have worked on this. It's pretty amazing.
I have to be honest with you about something, Michelle. This weekend, I had a chance to cross paths with one Michael Hammond.
Oh, wonderful.
And Zoe. And they sat down with one Jim Dorman of the Gig Show.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
And they actually talked about Born to Do This.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at the conversation that Zoe was like. She was, you know, at the writing the songs and the three of them kind of pulling this together. It's amazing, and I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping folks will get out and see.
I really think this. They should. I mean, first of all, Zoe's like a force, just a force. Especially once she gets a bee in a bonnet about something that she's very passionate about, and
she
has been very passionate about this. And then they have this amazing team with Michael Hammond supporting. She and Melissa Carubia, who wears many hats at the Company Theater, but is an exceptional music composer, director, all the things, conductor that you ever wished for. And she's put together, the three of them have put together this appealing and emotional, memorable score. So if you want to think of it as something totally different, this is not opera in the sense of opera. We're talking rock opera. So think Lady Gaga mashed up with Les Mis, okay? And a 14-piece orchestra. Like, what a cool experience for people to go attend a fresh new concept, a world premiere right here on the South Shore.
Right.
And it's the same team, again, as that created Paragon Park, which was a sold-out, like, to the rafters production. And people just have enjoyed it so much. So take your family, go enjoy tapping these universal themes and create some, like, conversations with them and enjoy some exceptional characters and teach them the story about believing in yourself, believing in a cause, and fighting for what's right over at the Company Theater.
Anything you want to touch upon, Mike? We got just a few minutes here.
Well, so. I just thought it was just a quick question on the
sure.
ACT Summer Workshop.
Oh, yeah, ACT. Yeah. So ACT is an acronym for the Academy of the Company Theater Workshop.
Nice.
It's been in place for years. They have hundreds of students that attend this and of many ages. And I can't even tell you, there's more than 70 classes that these students schedule themselves for every day.
Wow.
And there's a theme every day. And the kids go and leave there feeling like they've just gone to an amazing party. At the same time, they're learning all these really cool things, including acting, singing, media arts, painting, tech, playwriting, stage combat, culinary arts. There's so many things that the students do there. Every program's tailored to the student's age and ability, so there's multiple levels offered during each day, and the workshop culminates in an arts festival on Saturday, July 15th. So that is one of those programs that definitely sells out super early. If you're still interested in that, you want to go check out their website at companytheater.com, and the summer workshop runs from June 26th through July 14th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Company Theater in Norwell.
And I would be remiss if I didn't remind folks, when we're talking theater here, we're not talking to go in like a Marvel movie, the theater. We're talking, it's spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, not E-R. So keep that in mind. If you are looking, Company Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
That's correct.
.com. And same thing with the Americana Theater Company.
Right.
If you're going to be looking for anything that they're going to be doing, the performances, Americana Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E-A.org. Keep that in mind. I want to thank you so much for coming in this evening and giving us a whole rundown, things to plan, put into our calendars for the summer, whether it's on the weekend or maybe getting our children into some great enrichment programs and possibly being the next group of theater,
Oh, there's
kids.
So much. Yeah, and I'm so privileged. The pandemic made everything awfully quiet in the performing arts arena. And this summer is the first summer that I'm, really back up to snuff in terms of the volume of client performances and productions and events that I'm helping with. So if you want to learn more about all of those events that you can take part in or a program that you'd like to attend or a concert, please visit McGrathPR.com and you can enjoy this summer season's events preview, which includes more than 75 programs and performances this summer.
How about you? Any projects you got in the works? Are you going to do a follow-up to your cookbook?
I know. Yes, that is something I'm working on peripherally. I am going to be writing another cookbook. It's the timing's not etched in stone yet because I'm also in the middle of very exciting time. My oldest son is getting married this summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I just hosted his wedding shower with his future bride this weekend. And so I'm so thrilled that it's going to be a fun summer.
See, it's great because I get welcome. I mean, myself, welcoming my stepdaughter is getting ready to have her first child.
Wonderful.
In July, and it's great because it's like a year after she had gotten married. She got married up at Cathedral Ledge in New Hampshire, and it was like, wow. So, and our little Addie is turning 1 year old. So it's, it's a great time of year. How about you, Mike? Anything real quick you want to share that's...
No, I mean, not a lot. I mean, I just think, I love what you do. I love that everything that you've talked about is local, right? I'm a big proponent of supporting local.
Yes.
We talked about earlier in the first segment about looking for funding for certain things within the community of Rockland in order to support, municipal buildings and infrastructure.
Sure.
Well, that starts by supporting the businesses within your town.
Absolutely.
Right. The money goes directly back to your towns in a lot of those cases. So I'm a huge proponent of supporting local. I love that we have all of these things right here. To Kevin's point, who wants to sit in Boston traffic?
I don't.
And we got great restaurants here on the South Shore.
We really do. Really, really do. And they count on all the people that live here to stay in business, and we need to support them for sure.
Michelle, thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Mike, thank you for being a great co-host.
Thanks for having me.
Tip of the cap to Larry for doing a great job as my producer.
Thanks, Larry.
That's it for Monday Night Talk. That's it. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.
FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.